got a sprain or an itch, pain, rash, swelling, or twitch, call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Well, we have to start the show with the most current COVID-19 news that we could find. After all, this is the information that most of you are looking for on a medical radio show. The first COVID-19 vaccine that has been approved is the one that was made by Pfizer.
The vaccine is already being distributed and administered to healthcare workers around the country. It's a priority. It will also be residents of nursing homes and long-term care facilities.
Once there is enough of a national supply of vaccines and all essential healthcare workers have been provided the vaccine, then the general public can look forward to getting it. A second vaccine made by Moderna was just approved yesterday and is on its way to hospitals around the country, including those in Florida. The real difference between the two approved vaccines is that the Pfizer vaccine requires very cold storage, actually somewhere below minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit, while the Moderna vaccine, like most other antiviral vaccines, only requires a normal freezer for storage, as it only needs to be around minus 4 degrees. Both do require two immunizations with a short time period between each.
Thus, if there is enough to provide 40,000 vaccines, this means that only 20,000 can be vaccinated, as they must return within weeks for their second shot.
Thus, it seems that at least in the beginning, Pfizer will continue to be providing vaccines to hospitals for the administration of the vaccines, while Moderna's vaccine will be used for the general public. Of course, until such time that there is no need to limit the number of people getting immunized due to quantity of vaccines available.
Also, remember that there will most likely be other laboratories who will have approved vaccines in the future. So, we need to clarify what are the real facts concerning these two vaccines.
And as you all know, in this day and age, even a stamp of approval from the FDA simply isn't enough to calm some people's fears, especially those concerning vaccines. There are those that believe the myth that the vaccine includes a microchip that will be injected into the recipient's body. Again, that's a myth.
Pfizer has just released information on the 10 ingredients that actually make up their COVID vaccine.
Let's start with the messenger RNA, also known as mRNA. It is the main ingredient and the only active ingredient in the Pfizer vaccine. We explained this last week, but for those of you who did not get to listen to that show, Carmen's going to give you a brief review of just what mRNA is.
Once injected, this mRNA molecule will help human cells create a spike protein, which is what is found on the surface of the virus that causes COVID.
This in turn forces an immune system response that creates antibodies in order to attack this added protein without ever having to risk the serious consequences of getting sick with COVID-19. In other words, this will allow our bodies to learn how to fight against a potential future coronavirus infection. So we want to be very clear on this. mRNA vaccines cannot give somebody COVID-19. These mRNA vaccines do not use live viruses that cause COVID-19. They do not affect or interact with our DNA in any way.
In fact, the mRNA never enters the nucleus of the cell, which is where our DNA and, of course, our genetic material is kept.
The cell breaks down and gets rid of the mRNA soon after it's finished using the instructions. So to reiterate this, you need to know that in order to trigger an immune response, many vaccines put a weakened or inactivated germ into our bodies. This is simply not so for the mRNA vaccines.
Instead, they teach our cells how to make a protein, or even just a piece of a protein, that triggers an immune response inside our bodies.
That immune response, which produces antibodies, is what protects us from getting infected with the real virus as it enters our bodies. In other words, the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines give instructions for our cells to make a harmless piece of what is called the spike protein. It is this spike protein that's found on the surface of the virus that actually causes COVID-19.
COVID-19 mRNA vaccines are given in the upper arm muscle. Once the instructions mRNA are inside the immune cells, the cells use them to make the protein piece. After the protein piece is made, the cell breaks down the instructions and gets rid of them.
Now, this reminds me of the TV show and movies of Mission Impossible, where the hero receives his instructions, which then burn up just after he listens to them once. Carmen and I also just finished watching a TV documentary on ant colonies in Switzerland. Normally, when ants from one colony come in contact with ants from another colony, they touch antennae. If the ant does not recognize the, quote, scent of the other ant as being from his colony, then a war usually starts. But contact must be made for each ant to determine if the other is a friend or foe.
Same thing here. Your body comes into contact with the mRNA of the virus or the vaccine.
Once our cells determine that the mRNA is foreign to the body, it begins a cycle to produce antibodies that will destroy the virus in the future if it is ever attacked again.
Since ever since mRNA is safe, in other words, cannot cause symptoms, the body builds up the immunity without the person's ever getting the symptoms that the virus itself would impart.
Like we said, our immune systems recognize that the protein doesn't belong there and begin building an immune response and making antibodies, just like what happens in natural infections against COVID-19. At the end of the process, our bodies have learned how to protect against future infections. What's the benefit? Well, it should be obvious. The benefit of mRNA vaccines, like all vaccines, is those vaccinated gain this protection without ever having to risk the serious consequences of getting sick with COVID-19.
So, those vaccines made with mRNA cannot give someone COVID-19. The mRNA vaccines do not use the live virus that causes COVID-19. They do not affect or interact with our DNA in any way.
The mRNA never enters the nucleus of the cell, which is where our DNA, that's the genetic material, is kept. The cell breaks down and gets rid of the mRNA soon after it is finished using the instructions.
We may not have heard much about these mRNA vaccines. Most of the time, we hear only about live attenuated and killed viruses being used.
But mRNA vaccines are new, but not unknown. So although there are currently no licensed mRNA vaccines in the United States, researchers have been studying and working with them for decades. Interest has grown in these vaccines because they can be developed in a laboratory using readily available materials.
This means the process can actually be standardized and scaled up, making vaccine development faster than in traditional methods of making vaccines.
The mRNA vaccines have been studied before for the flu, Zika, remember that? Cytomegalovirus, and even rabies. In the future, mRNA vaccine technology may allow for one vaccine to provide protection for multiple diseases. This would mean less shots would be needed for protection against common vaccine-preventable diseases. And it's not only useful for vaccines. This research has been used to trigger the immune system to target specific cancer cells.
Getting back to the ingredients in the Pfizer vaccine, the second ingredient group are the lipids. There are four lipids.
The term lipid simply means a greasy chemical, a fat, or a fat-like substance that's in the blood. The body generally stores fat as energy for future use, just like a car that has a reserve fuel tank. Three of these lipids have complex names, but you'll know the fourth as cholesterol. You may be asking, why are lipids added to the vaccine? Aren't they just a filler? Well, no. These lipids join to form a protective bubble around the mRNA because this molecule is naturally very fragile and could be easily destroyed if it wasn't surrounded.
Next in our list of ingredients of the Pfizer vaccine are the sugars or sucrose. Apparently, the sugar is simply added to protect the vaccine's nanoparticles from clumping up when they are placed in storage.
After all, the Pfizer vaccine has to be kept extremely cold and stored at 94 degrees below zero. That's actually colder than winter in Antarctica.
Finally, there are the salts. So, the last four ingredients are salts, starting with potassium chloride, two other potassium salts, and sodium chloride, otherwise known as table salt.
These salts are used in many vaccines, as they help a vaccine match its contents to the environment of the human body, which contains a mixture of natural salts already. You may be curious as to why the Pfizer product needs to be in such a cold environment when the Moderna virus vaccine does not. Well, here's the skinny on that.
Moderna has said that its vaccine needs to be frozen too, but only at minus 4 degrees, more like a regular freezer.
So right off the bat, distributing vaccines in these conditions is possible, but it's definitely going to be much more expensive and more difficult. Pfizer has tried to calm concerns about the challenges presented by these cold temperatures. It's actually designed its own packaging to keep doses super cold with dry ice so that they can be stored for a few weeks without specialized freezers. This packaging has been given the nickname of the pizza box.
To understand why these vaccines need to be frozen, it helps to understand a bit about how they work. We know from the news that vaccines made from mRNA can be made much faster than older vaccines.
The problem here is that mRNA is really easily destroyed, and that's because there are many, many enzymes that will just break it apart. Now, here's an analogy. I read that you should think of the vaccine as a chocolate bar that melts easily. Just as there are ways to keep the chocolate from melting into goo, there are things that drug makers do to protect their COVID-19 vaccines.
The first step was to modify the mRNA nucleosides of the RNA vaccine because these are much more stable. The analogy goes on to say that this would be like changing the chocolate recipe so it's not quite so melty.
The next step was to use lipid nanoparticles, which is kind of like putting your chocolate inside a candy coating. Think of M&Ms here. Remember their saying that M&Ms melt in your mouth, not in your hand.
But even with the stabilized building blocks and lipid coating, the mRNA could still fall apart easily, which is why the vaccine is frozen.
Everything happens more slowly as you lower the temperature. Even your chemical reactions, that is the reaction where the enzyme that breaks down RNA are going to happen more slowly. It's the same thing as freezing food to keep it from spoiling.
However, the question remains, why do these two mRNA vaccines have different temperature requirements? It may just come down to what the developer's data is.
So, if the data shows that it's more stable at a certain temperature, that's it. It's possible that Pfizer's vaccine could eventually be shown to be stable in somewhat warmer conditions, or for longer times out of the freezer, but not yet.
Since time was and still is of the essence here, Pfizer decided not to delay bringing the vaccine to the public.
And getting back to what we said at the beginning of the show, these storage requirements show why it makes sense to think about distributing Pfizer's vaccine to larger population centers, not just because of its temperature, but because the smallest amount that you can order is 975 doses. So if you have a large university where you're going to be able to reach a large number of people, that would make sense that you might consider distributing your ultra-cold vaccine, while the Moderna vaccine will work better in areas where it might be more difficult to use up such a large order, or they may not have the cold storage.
We should really not think of this as a race. It is much more likely that we will need several manufacturers across the world to be able to vaccinate enough people to produce a variable herd immunity.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Hello, I'm Dr. Harold Lasky. I have been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 34 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office.
We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. We mentioned earlier that mRNA research may become useful in our ability to cure or even prevent cancer. So Carmen thought that our next topic should be that four-letter word, cancer. Now, cancer is not a single disease, but a collection of related diseases.
The body normally has a way to create just enough cells for each type of body tissue that it needs. However, in all types of cancer, some of the body's cells begin to divide without stopping and spread it into surrounding tissue.
Your body is literally made up of trillions of cells, and cancer can start almost anywhere. When cells grow old or become damaged, they die, and new cells take their place. For example, the lifespan of your red blood cells is around 120 days. So every 4 months or so, all of your red cells are new.
When cancer develops, however, this orderly process breaks down as cells become more and more abnormal. Old or damaged cells survive when they should die, and new cells form when they are not needed.
These extra cells can divide without stopping and may form growths which we call tumors. And it's important to remember that not all tumors are cancer. Many cancers form solid tumors, which are masses of tissue.
But cancers of the blood, such as leukemias, generally do not form solid tumors. Cancerous tumors are considered malignant. This just means they can spread into or invade nearby tissue.
Another problem is that as these tumors grow, some cancer cells can break off and travel to distant places in the body, through the blood or the lymph system, and form new tumors far from the original tumor, and that's called metastasis. Unlike malignant tumors, benign tumors do not spread into or invade nearby tissues.
Just because they are benign does not always mean they cannot cause problems or even death. Benign tumors can sometimes be quite large and sometimes block or prevent organs from working appropriately.
Luckily, when removed, they usually don't grow back, whereas malignant tumors sometimes do. A particularly dangerous benign tumor is one that is located in the brain.
So, why do these cancer cells grow out of control? One important difference is that cancer cells are less specialized than normal cells. That is, whereas normal cells mature into very distinct cell types with specific functions, cancer cells do not.
Now, this is one reason that, unlike normal cells, cancer cells continue to divide without stopping. Also, it appears that cancer cells are able to ignore the signals that normally tell cells to stop dividing or that begin a process known as programmed cell death, also called, here's a good word, apoptosis, which the body uses to get rid of unneeded cells.
Cancer cells may also be able to influence the normal cells, molecules, and blood vessels that surround and feed a tumor.
Let me give you an example here. There are cancer cells which can induce nearby normal cells to form blood vessels that supply tumors with oxygen and nutrients, which they need to grow. These blood vessels also remove waste products from the tumors.
You would think that the body would be able to see these cancer cells as foreign. However, cancer cells are also often able to evade the immune system that protects the body from infections and other conditions.
Although the immune system normally removes damaged or abnormal cells from the body, some cancer cells are able to literally hide from the immune system. And some tumors can also use the immune system to stay alive and grow. That's right, with the help of certain immune system cells that normally prevent a runaway immune response, cancer cells can actually keep the immune system from killing cancer cells.
For whatever reason, and this is being researched extensively, cancer is caused by certain changes to genes, which are the basic physical units of inheritance.
Cancer is caused by changes in those genes that control the way our cells function, especially how they grow and divide. Now, some genetic changes that cause cancer can be inherited from our parents, or they can also arise during a person's lifetime as a result of errors that occur as cells divide, or because of damage to DNA, sometimes caused by certain environmental exposures. Cancer can be a combination of both genetic and environmental causes as well.
Cancer causing environmental exposures include substances such as the chemical and tobacco smoke and radiation such as ultraviolet rays from the sun.
Each person's cancer has a unique combination of genetic changes. As the cancer continues to grow, additional changes will occur.
The genetic changes that contribute to cancer tend to affect three main types of genes. These are the proto-oncogenes genes, tumor suppressor genes, and DNA repair genes.
Proto-oncogenes. These are involved in normal cell growth and division. However, when these genes are altered in certain ways or are more active than normal, they may become cancer-causing genes which allow the cells to grow and survive when they should not. Then there are the tumor suppressor genes, which are also involved in controlling cell growth and division. And finally, the DNA repair genes, which are involved in fixing damaged DNA.
Cells with mutations in these genes tend to develop additional mutations in other genes. Together, these mutations may cause the cells to become cancerous.
Scientists have found that certain mutations commonly occur in many types of cancer. Now, because of this, cancers are sometimes characterized by the type of genetic alterations that are believed to be driving them, rather than just classifying them by their place of origin.
In metastasis, cancer cells break away from where they first form primary cancer, travel through the blood or lymph system, and form new tumors in other parts of the body. The metastatic tumor is the same type of cancer as a primary tumor.
A cancer that is spread from place where it is first started to another place in the body is called metastatic cancer. The process by which cancer cells spread to other parts is called metastasis. Metastatic tumors has the same name and the same type of cancer cells as the original or primary cancer. For example, breast cancer that spreads to and forms a metastatic tumor in the lung is metastatic breast cancer, not considered lung cancer. Now, under a microscope, metastatic cancer cells generally look the same as the cells of the original cancer.
Moreover, metastatic cancer cells and cells of the original cancer usually have some molecular features in common, such as the presence of a specific chromosome changes.
Unfortunately, there are so many more types of cancers that we'll just have to continue talking about those in the next week's show. Well, we promised all of you last week that we would continue our tradition prior to Christmas and sing all of you a Christmas song. So get out those earplugs, and we are going to give you our rendition of Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad,
próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad.
Ajá. Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad.
Feliz Navidad,
feliz Navidad.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of our hearts.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.